Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from End Screen Media is with me on the line. Hi there, Colin.
Hey, Will. So I think you are in the crosshairs of a big heat up in the central and eastern part of the U.S.
Oh, yeah. We've had huge heat wave here over the past week, and getting one day of respite today. We're recording on Thursday, and then we're going to get more heat over the weekend. So, yeah, it's been pretty toasty here. How about you guys?
No, we are just absolutely delightful at the moment. But, you know, there's a company that has been feeling the heat a lot in the last 24 hours, and we're going to be talking about Netflix today, right?
Yeah, we haven't talked about Netflix in a while, actually, but we'll return to it today because they reported their Q2 2019 results yesterday, and it was definitely a quarter unlike we've seen from Netflix in quite some time. They recorded their first ever subscriber loss domestically in Q2 2019, streaming subscriber loss, I should say. Because of course they have been losing. They don't even report any more subscribers on the DVD side. But in any event, they lost about 130,000 paid subscribers, domestically, to end at 60.1 million. So that 130,000 loss compares actually with a gain that they were forecasting of around 300,000, and also a year ago a gain of about 870,000. So pretty big swing, actually, almost about a million swing versus a year ago, Q2 18 domestically. And then internationally, they also slowed down. They didn't lose subscribers. They still gained about 2.8 million. That's compared, though, with a forecasted gain of 4.7 million and a gain a year ago in Q2 2018 of 4.6 million. So when you add it all up, they added 2.7 million globally in Q2 19. That was down by about a half from about 5.4 million a year ago. So that's a pretty big swing for Netflix. I'll say one more thing on the numbers, then let's kind of talk a little bit more about what they explain and what we think it might be going on. But they did say in Q3 19 that they see a reacceleration. So they're forecasting 800,000 domestic additions in the U.S. in Q3. That's actually down from a million that they added a year ago in Q3 18. But they are increasing their international forecasts versus a year ago. So a year ago, they added 5.1 million internationally, and Q3 19, they're forecasting 6.2 million. So in other words, a continued slowdown in the U.S., but a reacceleration internationally. So that's a lot of numbers, that's a lot of data to go through, but the net of it is that I think it kind of raises the question whether the Q2 results are a short-term blip or the start of a longer-term trend. So what do you think?
Well, thinking about that just for a second here, Will, on the short-term blip, the company certainly seems to think it's going to recover next quarter. As you say, they're forecasting, I think, 7 million additions in that quarter. And they made an interesting comment during the earnings call, or I should say earnings broadcast, because they said that they'd already seen a big uptick due to the release of Stranger Things 3. So that is already accelerating the subscriber growth for Q3. So I think they're probably in good shape for next month. Of course, the other big thing, and one of the things that probably did impact them in the US, was the fact that they increased prices in May. And this was actually a pretty big price increase. It was $2 per month for the HD and Ultra HD plans and $1 per month for the SD, the standard def plan. And ironically, that meant that they actually increased revenue generation in the US, even though they lost a little bit of subs. They did a quarter over quarter increase of 11%. and a year-over-year increase of 21%, and they're now earning $2.3 billion a quarter in the U.S. So that's a pretty big number. Of course, there wasn't really a broad rollout of that price increase internationally, so that really didn't seem to have a big impact. So that really leaves you asking what was the big impact for this quarter overall, and I think it was the fact that they just didn't have anything like Stranger Things 3 to really bring subscribers in. Well, I think, you know, what I believe anyway is that big titles are the things that really bring in new subscribers. That's not what keeps them. What keeps them is a solid library and a continuous stream of good quality content, not necessarily hits coming into the service. So there's always plenty of stuff to watch. But I think that the lack of a big title in Q2 was the thing that really sunk them in the US. That was the thing that stalled growth in the US for the first time. And I have to admit, Will, I'm pretty surprised that they aren't better at, first of all, one, forecasting, and second of all, manipulating the release of the titles so that they do get something that's potentially a big winner for them in each quarter, so that they can that helps draw in new subs. So I think that's what I see, at least in the short term, that's what I see impacting the Q2 numbers. Now going forward, that's a different question. But before we do that, I mean, do you sort of broadly agree with that, or do you have another explanation for what happened in Q2?
Yeah, that was certainly, the explanation that management gave was the weakness of the content slate, the content offering. As you say, no big hits released in Q2. So they pointed to that. They also said that they lost subscribers in all regions, internationally as well, even where price increases did not hit. So they said that slightly more so in regions where there were price increases. I think broadly speaking, that's probably right. And I would hone in maybe on one of the points that you made, which is that the idea of being better at forecasting, I feel like we had this conversation on a podcast, like, I don't know, 4 years ago or something, when they missed a forecast in a big way. And they've been streaming now for 12 years. And it is a little surprising to me that when they release a forecast several weeks into a quarter, which is, you know, what they're always doing. So they released their forecast several weeks into Q2. So that was, I guess, back in April, somewhere mid to late April, that they don't have a better sense of what the dynamics are going to be in that quarter, whether it's price increases or weakness of content or, you name it, that the 12 years in, they don't have quite a better handle on what the impact of those things are going to be. So that's the part that surprises me a little bit, that that they were not more accurate in their forecasting, given what they knew to be the case. The other one on the being better on the release schedule, as you say, my guess is that they sort of know those dynamics, and, you know, I could be wrong, but I don't think it's a big surprise given we know the history of how HBO and Showtime, et cetera, have worked with their big releases. They may have been pushing those releases to get them going as soon as possible, and this is just where they landed, and there was nothing more that could be done. So there's only X number of big titles that they have, and production takes a certain amount of time, et cetera, and it just may have been impossible to pull them into Q2. And then just one last thing that I would say is that it's possible also that, and they sort of alluded to this a little bit on the earnings broadcast, that they may have pulled back on marketing spending a little bit in Q2, recognizing that they had a weaker content slate and saving some of that marketing spend for the back half of the year. So that could have contributed also, though they didn't break that out specifically, but they sort of alluded to it a little bit.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, as you say, you'd think by now they'd be better at forecasting. I mean, they certainly when they do the forecast, they've got a pretty good visibility on what's going to be released in that quarter. I can't believe the production cycle. I mean, the production cycle is essentially done a quarter before. You would think that it would be almost completely done the quarter before it's released. So I don't know, maybe so, maybe not. But actually thinking further ahead, I think Netflix is in pretty good shape for Q3. I think Stranger Things will do its thing and is already bringing new subscribers in, I think. And that's an international thing. They talked about this international success of Stranger Things, and they also have quite a lot of stuff happening in other geographies. So, like I think they've got the season 2 of The Rain, which will be a big pull in Denmark and in the Scandinavian markets, and they've got some big releases in India and Germany as well. So I think they'll do pretty well in the third quarter. The fourth quarter is actually where I think things could go south again, and Q1 particularly of 2020, things could go south because I believe that Netflix is going to be adversely impacted by Disney Plus and by HBO Max, more by Disney Plus than anything else. I think Disney Plus, they're a master at marketing, and they will blanket the digital airwaves with their marketing for the service. And frankly, it will be difficult for Netflix to be heard next to that loud shouting. And bearing in mind it's a new service and it's very cheap, and also bearing in mind that they will be releasing exclusively the latest episode of the Marvel franchise, Infinity War. Was it Infinity War this time? I don't know. I don't really follow these ones. But they're releasing that exclusively 30 days after the service starts on November. I think they said it launches on November 20th. So that will be a big draw as well. I really think that Netflix is going to see an impact. I think the fourth quarter will be considerably down from last year, and so will Q1. And we'll see what happens in Q2 and beyond. So I do think that they have a problem short term, at least for the next 6 months or a year, from impact from increased competition. What do you think?
Yeah, and that's all before talking about the loss of key content like Friends and The Office. I think I mostly agree with you. Disney Plus is definitely going to be the shiny new object in the market later this year, and Q4 tends to be the big quarter for additions and activations, Q4 and Q1. So that's when Disney is coming. So it's going to be hard for not just Netflix, but I think for anybody else to be heard in the SVOD space in that several month period, give or take 3 or 4 months. I think all that makes sense. And then, of course, the other thing it just sort of harkens back to is, if it's difficult for Netflix to forecast somewhat accurately in Q2, it's kind of hard to imagine how difficult it's going to be to forecast when it has these new high-profile competitors coming into the market. Then things really get scrambled in terms of forecasting, right?
You bet it is. And as you say, you touched on something that's very interesting. You mentioned the fact that Friends and The Office are leaving, and they'll be leaving sort of gradually over the next year. And you got to believe that that is going to have an impact. And the way the company is really their statement on that is that's why they've been investing in original content. In fact, Ted Sarandos in the call, he was very specific. He said over 6 years ago, we got into original programming, betting that the licensed programming will be more and more difficult to come by, and that the sources of content to license from will be under different levels of strain. And he also said that he thinks it's paid off, and it's very important to the business to continue to pushing down that road. So their answer is continuing to invest in originals. And I've got to tell you, I I heard some new data this week that sort of justifies what he's saying. I was at a conference called LAES and OTTX, OTT Exchange, presenting down there. And I heard Kathy Chandler Payette, who's from the MPT group, give a presentation on some data that she has been looking at. And she says that although originals are a smallish part of the viewing that takes place, they are growing very fast. So to give example, she said in 2018, 13% of new shows on Netflix were original. And the Netflix has increased their shows to 16% in 2019, but the viewership has grown faster. So 2017 and 2018, the average minutes watched per Netflix profile per day remained the same, 33 minutes. But the share of original content share of that increased from 13% to 19%. And so far, she says it's grown to 24% in 2019. So really seems like the originals are beginning to pay off for Netflix. So hopefully by the time they really do lose Friends and The Office, there is plenty of other stuff around that people will feel comfortable watching, you know, catching up on. And the interesting thing for me with Friends and The Office, Will, is this is like comfort food, right? This is something that people watch. They probably watched these shows many times before, but they sort of put it on because they feel really comfortable with it and they really like the characters and it makes them feel good. That's the interesting thing for Netflix. Can they replace that type of viewing with new original content? And, you know, I'm not sure that it works that way, but I don't know. But what do you think?
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, the definition of comfort food is the familiar, and as you defined it, the familiar and the feel good effect. That's not an effect that you get when you're watching new shows. So you've got to be several seasons in to develop that sort of loyalty and comfort. So that is a challenge. But the data you just shared is, I think, roughly in line with some data that I had seen also this week and reported on from Moffitt Nathanson and Harris X, where they said that three quarters of Netflix's top 20 most popular shows are now originals. And the only ones that were not basically originals were Friends, The Office, and Breaking Bad and Supernatural. So, yeah, I think that broadly speaking, that originals are gaining in terms of the in terms of popularity of what people watch on Netflix, which is great. But those are going to be a couple of pretty big holes that are going to be lost in terms of comfort food, as we're saying, over the course of the next year. So between those losses and the launches of the new services that we talked about, it does seem like it's some uncharted territory. And that, again, I think is the biggest question for me coming out of this Q2 report, is whether the subscriber loss or the slowdown internationally is a short-term blip or whether it's part of a longer-term trend.
That's right. And my belief is next quarter they'll recover, but Q4 and Q1 of next year and probably Q2 too, they will begin to feel the impact of this competition. And so I think, short term they'll recover, longer term they're going to see the impact. But I don't know, beyond that, I really think if you look at a show like Friends, Will, Friends wants a really, there's a lot of people that like that show, but I'm just not sure that it is enough to get people to spend, what is it, $15 or more that they're going to have to spend for HBO Max, which is where it's going to reappear. And The Office, which is an NBC program, will probably resurface in NBC's service, which will launch next year, but be tied to pay TV and include advertising. So, you know, you got to wonder if those are going to be a sufficient draw to get people over to those services. You know, maybe they just figure out how to live without them and go on. I don't know. It's very interesting to see.
Live without comfort food.
Yeah. The other thing I just want to mention, I know we're getting close to time here, is Netflix has done something which I think they have desperately needed to do. And that is they've finally given in to the idea that they have to have a low price tier in markets like India. They have been really struggling in India and Southeast Asia and some other really low income areas. And the reason is pretty simple. They're just too expensive. And if you look at India, for example, the leading service there is a service called Hotstar, which is owned by Disney, and Disney owned it because they bought Fox, and actually Fox owned Hotstar. So that's how that Disney ended up with it. But that Disney's claiming that has 300 million active monthly users, and that's free and paying. There's a free tier with Hotstar. And Counterpoint estimated, at least at the end of 2017, that the service had 75 million subscribers paying $3 a month. Now, Netflix at that time cost more than twice as much and had a tenth of the paying subscribers. So I think that their decision that they need to introduce a mobile-oriented low-cost tier is exactly the right thing to do in that market, because it is a very mobile-oriented market. Now, Craig Peters, who is the chief product officer, threw out $5 pay television package as the sort of bar. That's not the bar they need to be looking at. It's the $3 Hotstar package that is the bar. So I would expect them to introduce a $3 package here. But make no mistake, that could have a huge impact in Netflix international subscriber games. They could pick up, this is such a big market, Will. They could pick up 10 million subscribers in a year, no problem. So India alone could be contributing 2 or 3 million subscribers a quarter to Netflix subscriber rolls, which will definitely get that needle moving again. And the other thing is that they're making the investment in content. They have several shows coming out on that service from India in the next several months. And so I think they're doing the right things in that market now. They need to spread that through other Southeast Asian countries to really jumpstart their performance in those countries, where they're really losing pretty badly to another service called iFlix, which is once again very, very cheap, mobile oriented. So that's at least one thing that I think they're doing that should have a really positive benefit on subscriber gains in international markets.
All right. Well, I think I agree with you on that one as well. It seems like they've gotten religion there. So we'll keep an eye on that, and keep an eye on how Netflix does over these next couple of quarters. Pretty pivotal in terms of answering this question about short-term blip or long-term trend, right?
You bet. You bet. We'll know where we are this time next year.
Yeah. All right, Colin, good chatting as always, and thanks everyone for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast, and we'll see you all again next week.